when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you, thank you, thank you for hanging out. And I'd like to thank our donors one more time, and I'd like to let you know I'm making a list of everyone that's ever donated even $1, and we have had people who have sent in $1, and I call it the widow's mite because I can surely identify with that. But I'm trying to make a list of everyone. I've gone back in my records, and I hope I don't leave anybody out because I want to name each one of them, each one of y'all by heart. Before the new year, because without the donors, I was talking about that to Sam today, and there is no way in hell I could finance this program by myself. There's no way Sam could do it. His expenses are greater than mine, but it's not cheap, and that's just money-wise. It takes a lot of hours, but I'm not complaining about it. It's sometimes you do get tired of it, and sometimes you think you're not doing any good, and then you'll have a donor or a friend that listens to call you and tell you, you know, they look forward to hearing the program, and they're having a bad day, and all they can just make it to hear Blood River Radio, and that happens. That pick them up, that they'll realize there's somebody out there fighting for them and to the best of their ability, and that's what keeps me going, that and knowing about what's facing us, global white genocide people. But anyway, I'm going to get off of that. And before we go to our great, great guest, I feel like he's a brother too, but I'm just going to kind of recap briefly what we did first hour. I'd like to thank once again Phil Torney for coming on from USS Liberty. And we didn't get into Pearl Harbor a whole lot because that's not his stick. His thing is USS Liberty, and he's been fighting to bring attention to what happened there. Since June 8th of 1967 when that happened, and they've had very little success because you know who controls everything, controls the media, they control the Congress. You don't do anything without the chosen ones putting their stamp of approval on it. But I'd like to make one more mention about the wonderful Tom Goodrich. He was the author, and I mentioned him writing the book Hellstorm. And also, he wrote the book The Summer of Fire or something like that. And I'll have to look that up. The Summer of Fire and Rape, 1945. I've made some mention of that. But we're going to do, in the near future, soon get some of my co-hosts down, like Gene and Rich. They read that book inside and out. And I want to get them on and we want to do an honor of at least an hour to Tom Goodrich. He used to come on the show every February during Dresden Week, him and a guy named Paul English did the narrative. He did the talking for the fuses hack, y'all. It's really bad today. He was the voiceover for the audiobook of the Hellstorm. Anyway, enough of the first hour, enough of Hellstorm. We have a guy who has, in fact, on our show notes, wrote in there about him, Don Wassell. I compared him and Paul Fromm together because they've both been in the fight for years. I had no idea that Don had such a distinguished resume. And he's carried newspapers for, I think, 30 years. And he was one of the founders, what I've had him on today, especially wanting him to talk about. It's from the very beginning how he started the Populist Party. I know he was a founding member. He was one of the founders. So before I choke to death, Don, how are you doing today, my brother?
Oh, I'm doing great, Eddie. Thanks for having me back on again.
Thank you for coming on. Like I was telling people, your resume is incredible. Just, hey, I'm notorious or famous, whatever, for repeating myself, but we have people, sometimes people listen, sometimes they don't. You have new people coming on frequently. So give them a brief background, a resume of how you got into this. A lot of people, for lack of a better word, for the Patriot movement, with your newspaper writing, anything you did, street protests. I know you've done street. You've done it all. So give people, and don't cut out too much, because I want them people to know, because your resume was a lot greater than I thought it was. But go ahead, Don.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to try and keep it pretty brief, because I have done a lot of things, and it's easy to go into a lot of over detail. But basically, I'd gone to Penn State. I got a BA in political science, and decided I didn't really have any use for that. I didn't want to become a teacher or a professor or anything like that, so I went to law school. And not that I was so keen on being an attorney, but that was just sort of a logical thing, was a good degree to have. And so I went to law school at the University of Pittsburgh, and I was still very interested in politics. I was conservative, Republican, and instead of studying the books all the time in law school, I found myself reading a lot of political literature, and at some point, I was reading The New Republic, which was a very liberal magazine, and there was this pretty long article on it, an issue back in, this was like 1981, condemning this newspaper called The Spotlight, which had started in 1975, and at the time of this article in 1981, this was right after Ronald Reagan had assumed the presidency, it had a circulation of about a third of a million. And it was a weekly newspaper, and that just blew my mind, because this article was going on and on about how it was anti-Semitic, it was racist, it was neo-Nazi, it was this, this, and this. I thought, I've never even heard of it. How could there be something in this country supposedly pro-National Socialist with 350,000 weekly subscribers? I thought, this is incredible. I want to know more about it. And so I looked around. I finally found it in the University of Pittsburgh's library. They actually had a subscription to it, and I just started reading it, got absorbed in it, and kind of went from there and just learned a lot about nationalism, National Socialism, the whole racial movement. Before what I'd read, I'd always been condemning it. I was a typical suburban conservative. What I had heard about the far right was always in the most negative terms, and so I just started reading things that weren't in those horrible negative terms, and I didn't agree with all of it, but I agreed with enough of it, and the Spotlight at that time was starting to push a political party called the Populist Party that they were started and were pushing from Liberty Lobby headquarters, which was right in Washington, D.C., and this was in the early to mid-80s, and they did have a political candidate in 1984, presidential candidate. His name was Paul Richards. Some of your listeners may remember him. He was an Olympian, I think, in 1956. I think he was a gold medalist. I think he was what's that event where you, the 10 different event, decathlete or something like
decathlon.
That.
Oh, decathlon. Wow.
But yeah, he was on the cover of Wheaties. I mean, he was an all-American hero type, Paul Richards. And so yeah, he was the nominee, but this was called the Populist Party of the United States. But there was a falling out with Willis Cardo, who was the force behind the Spotlight newspaper, basically owned it. He owned Liberty Lobby, and he had a falling out with Paul Richards, and before you knew it, they were attacking him, later on suing him, and so the whole thing became a fiasco, and Liberty Lobby ended up being fined by the Federal Election Commission heavily for some of the shenanigans as far as the record keeping and the fundraising and things like that. So that all fell apart, but in the meantime, I kept and a few others here in Pennsylvania, we still like the idea of the Populist Party. I was talking to Michael Collins Piper, who was a writer at the Spotlight at the time, young guy like me at the time, and we hit it off, and I told him I wanted to keep the Populist Party going if possible, and so we started organizing here in Pennsylvania, and by 1986, we had a state party organized. We had regular meetings, state meetings, regional meetings, county meetings, things like that. We were running balloted candidates for office as Populist Party candidates. And if you know anything about third parties, that's the hardest thing of all, is to actually get them on the ballot, find people to run for office that are qualified, and get them on the ballot and try to run a campaign for them. So we were doing that. And In the meantime, I had started a newsletter called The Populist Observer, and that caught on well. And eventually, again, I was on good terms with Willis Carto and Mike Piper and the people, Liberty Lobby, and so they decided to start the Populist Party up again nationally, and with the national headquarters in Pittsburgh, where I lived, and the national office was in Pittsburgh, and I was the executive director, and the Populist Observer newsletter became the went from being a state newsletter to the national voice of the Populist Party. We go into break here, Eddie?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I hear the trumpets. So,
yes, sir. We're going to a quick break. I'm glad you could hear it. Be right back, folks.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR's hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force!
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging out. I'll tell you what, that old guerrilla general, I believe he might be one of my favorite characters. I think he's like me. He didn't have a whole lot of formal education, but he knew. He knew what BS from the real deal. It's just my opinion that in the end, there's never going to be any what we consider what we call a peaceful solution to get us out of the situation we're in. And well, anyway, we'll shut up. We're going to go back to Don Wassel. I'm so appreciative that Don came in. After I found out that he was instrumental in getting that Populist Party going, I want him on ever since, and I want to thank you again, Don, for coming on, brother. And please don't worry about taking a long time, because because you know what, at the time you're doing this, I'm thinking, how can we do it again? And I know hopefully there's some young people out there listening to you, Don, and maybe if not me, because I'm an old guy, maybe they, the younger people, can resurrect the sucker. And I mean, you're a resource. You're a very valuable resource, because you've been there, you've done that. In fact, I hope I don't get too long in the tooth here, too long in the mouth. But I'm hoping that you could write a book that you mentioned on the last show, that you could write a book on starting a third party. And that would be great if you could write that book. But anyway, I'm going to shut up now, and I've already blabbered too much, and go back, and if you can, Take up where you left off and don't leave any stone unturned. Let us know about how you started the Populist Party, the Populist Observer, and the newspaper. And also, I want to, before we forget, before we don't run out of time, I want to talk about the newspaper you had to let go. And it's a couple of those issues I was extremely interested in. But go ahead, Don. I hope I didn't talk too long.
Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. So the first Populist Party, the one of 1984, it just totally fell apart with infighting and lawsuits. And just it was a real nasty thing, unfortunately. And so we picked it up 1986, basically here in Pennsylvania. We had a good organization, we were running people, we had a publication, we had everything going that a third party should at the state level. And so in December of 1986, Willis Cardo and Mike Piper called me jointly and said, look, we want to start the Populist Party up again nationally, and we want you to either be the national chairman of it or the executive director. At the time, I was a young attorney, had a law career going, and I was still doing this on the side, basically, all this Populist Party work. And I was a little hesitant about getting that much involved. I had a friend that Cardo knew here in Pittsburgh named Tom McIntyre. He was an electrician, good man. Didn't have a lot of formal background or anything, but we decided that he would be the national chairman and I would be the executive director. Tom was a very friendly fella, and he was in some ways a figurehead, which I don't mean that in a negative way. He understood that. We all did. But we rebuilt the party around that idea that Tom would be the feel-good chairman. I was the executive director. And so we had a national meeting in March of 1987 here in Pittsburgh. And started the party up, and you know, there was about 150, 200 people there from about, I think, 40 states. And we called it, the first one in 1984 that fell apart was the Populist Party of the United States. So we called this the Populist Party of America to distinguish it from the previous version and to give it a separate legal status with the Federal Election Commission, because you do anything on a federal level with politics, sooner or later you have to register with the Federal Election Commission and follow all their regulations. So we did that, set up a national office here in Pittsburgh, and a small blue-collar section called Millville, which is 5 miles from downtown Pittsburgh, and something that could never be done today, believe me. I mean, we had an office there, big sign and everything, right in this little neighborhood called Millville, and, you know, if we tried something like that today, the windows would be smashed, there would be thugs, Antifa types coming in to confront us and things like that. But
and that was 87, did you say, Don? That was 1987.
Yeah, 1987.
Thank you, John.
And, we went down there for a few years, and so it worked out. Again, we were organized now nationally. We were running candidates all over Pennsylvania, balloted. I'm talking about balloted, not just, you know, symbolic ones, but ones that were actually on the ballot, including our chairman, Tom McIntyre, who ran for Pittsburgh City Council. Ran for the U.S. Congress in 1986 and then for Pittsburgh City Council in 1987 and again in 1989. And then in 1988, we had our first presidential campaign. I'm sure most of your readers or listeners have heard of David Duke. Earlier in 1988, he had run as a Democrat, but, you know, he had no hope of making inroads in the Democrat Party.
Oh,
but it got
no.
him some recognition. And so we met with him and decided to run him is our presidential candidate. Initially, his running mate, the vice presidential candidate, was Beau Greitz, who would go on to be our 1992 candidate. But Beau didn't like David. They were opposites in some ways. Beau had a half Vietnamese child from the Vietnam War days, and so you can imagine how he felt about David and vice versa. So that didn't work out too well. And so we got a different vice presidential candidate. But, you know, we went ahead, we ran David. Yeah, I think we were on the ballot in 13 states, which is good. I'll tell you what, third parties, it's ballot access is so difficult. It's just so difficult in most states. There's a few states where it's not tough, but generally speaking, it's so much more difficult than it is for Democrats and Republicans. But that's something we can get into more if you want to. So in 88, we ran a national candidate for president, pulled it off, and we were going strong. We were growing really quick, very fast, doubling in size each year. In 1989, there was a falling out. I'll just again, I don't know how much the details you want, but our national convention that year, this was in March of 89. It was right in downtown Chicago at a hotel. I think it was called the Roosevelt Hotel. It was right downtown. This time it did have there. I mean, there were hundreds of demonstrators outside. The national media was covering it. And that's because we had lined up David Duke and Evan Mecham to be our main speakers. Now, Duke had just run for, not only had run as our presidential candidate, but he had, right after that, there was a special election in Louisiana for the state legislature. There was somebody had passed away or resigned or whatever, and David got on the ballot as a Republican, and he won. Now, this was in late 88, early 1989, and that created a national stir. I mean, that's what really made Duke famous, was when he was elected to the Louisiana legislature. And so we had lined him up to speak, and Evan Mecham, who was a sitting governor of Arizona at the time, he agreed to speak too, even though he knew Duke was going to be there. Mecham was getting a lot of heat because Arizona was the only state in the country that refused to recognize the Martin Luther King holiday.
Oh, wow.
So he, you know, the heat of the system came down on him. So that was a heck of a 1-2 we put together. But what happened was, like, Willis Carter, I guess he was jealous or something. He did his best to undermine that. He called Mecham and put the pressure on him, and Mecham ended up backing out. And Duke was going to back out, but then we encouraged him to come, and he did follow through. But really, things came to a head with Cardo and the executive committee, the leaders of the party. We all strongly disagree with him, so Cardo resigned. He backed out along with Michael Collins Piper. Again, early 1989, things went along well for 2 years. We were growing. In 1990, we had balloted Populist Party candidates in every region of the country, including the South, where you already.
Yes.
I believe we had some in Tennessee that year who did well, and they averaged over 8%, about 8% of the vote. Okay, this is a third party.
That's huge.
With no real national leader and a financial base in 1990, our peak year financially, of about $250,000, and which would be about $1 million today, I think. But, you know, not bad, but it was a grassroots right-wing party that was really going places. And
I was a member.
Early 1991, the spotlight decided I was their enemy. This was 2 years after Willis Carto had left the Populist Party of his own volition. And then starting in early 1991, almost every issue of the spotlight, there was an attack on me, calling me, implying I was an ADL agent, State Department agent, this, that, you know, just about anything you can think of. I mean, it was a smear. It was a smear that went on for years. And, of course, most of our Populist Party members were Spotlight readers. And a lot of them were very faithful Spotlight readers because, you know, that was their Bible to them. And they trusted the Spotlight. So the Spotlight said, who's this guy Don Wassel who's taken over the Populist Party? And look at this isn't right. And, you know, he talked to somebody who supposedly talked to somebody else who was in the ADL or something like that. So, you know, there was just it just went on and on for years. I mean, it was... It turned from a fast-growing third party into a seven-year protracted struggle. We ended up suing the Spotlight, Carto, Mike Piper, Vince Ryan, who was the editor supposedly, for libel. And then they countersued us, the Populist Party and me individually, for libel. And so we had a suit and a countersuit in federal court that dragged on for years. That was... Our suit, our original suit, was eventually dismissed by a black federal judge here in Pittsburgh who was very biased. I mean, there was no grounds for it. It was just pure, well, I mean, we're very aware of lawfare now and how the courts have acted against Trump and things like that. This was done to us. So I appealed it to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, which is based in Philadelphia, which is one step below the U.S. Supreme Court. And so at that time... one other detail in which is absolutely unbelievable.
That costs money.
I was an attorney, so I did it all myself for free.
I had to cost some kind of money. Well, people, we got to go to a quick break. It's going to be about a 5-minute break. So if you have to use the restroom, get coffee, do what you got to do. This is a good time to do it. Be right back, folks.
pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Life takes a toll on our bodies. No way around it. Whether it's sitting hours on end at your computer or working a physical job, over time your body pays the price. There is, however, an effective way to turn back the clock on pain, Relief Factor. Developed by doctors, Relief Factor helps support your body's response to inflammation. The difference? Instead of masking pain, Relief Factor helps eliminate it for good. And it's 100% drug-free. If the pains that come with living a full life are affecting you, do as so many others have. Turn back the clock on pain with Relief Factor. Their three-week quick start is just $19.95, less than a dollar a day. When you feel good, it's amazing how much more you get out of life. So visit ReliefFactor.com or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. That's 1-800-4-RELIEF. Try it for only $19.95. While we can't stop aging, not yet, we can stop pain. Turn back the clock with Relief Factor.
An American journalist may still be alive after missing more than a decade in Syria.
The family of journalist Austin Tice says there's evidence to show he is alive. Austin Tice's mother, Deborah, gathered reporters to announce.
We have from a significant source that has already been vetted all over our government. Austin Tice is alive. Austin Tice is treated well.
The family met with national security officials amid the insurgent uprising in Syria. Tice's father, Mark, says the White House has been less than helpful in trying to secure the reporters' release. Tice disappeared in Syria in 2012. I'm Jackie Quinn.
South Korea's embattled president Yoon Suk-yeol has avoided an opposition-led attempt to impeach him over his short-lived imposition of martial law. Most of his ruling party lawmakers boycotted that vote earlier today. Breaking news and analysis, townhall.com. A majority of Supreme Court justices didn't seem convinced that federal regulators misled companies as they refused to allow them to sell sweet-flavored vaping products. Here's John Scott.
The High Court did raise questions about an FDA crackdown that included denials on sales of more than a million nicotine products formulated to taste like fruit, dessert, or candy. The case this week came a month before the start of the second Trump administration, which could change the FDA's approach after he vowed to save vaping. The court expected to decide the case in the coming months. John Scott reporting.
Nearly 3 out of 10 drugstores in America that were open during the previous decade had closed by 2021. A study published in Health Affairs says Black and Latino neighborhoods were hit the hardest. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ had been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth, about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these this means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your altering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
I gave you power, huh? Let me tell you something, boy. If I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
Ooh, Blood River Radio family. Just got this kind of startling news break that said next Monday, the New York Times said next Monday that the world, said world ends next Monday, and blacks and Latinos hit hardest. But anyway, also I'd like to go back and thank again our donors. And I'd like to also thank Jay and Lizzie and Sam. Sam, you know what, we don't see eye to eye on some things, me and Sam. But Sam is one of the few people in the United States that would allow us to do what we do here, because we're very hot. We push the envelope. We push it too far sometimes. Sometimes Sam's had to come in and warn us for our own good. But I'd like to thank, you know, I was talking to Sam about that, and we both agreed, you know, being a little radio guy like me, like you call it, what did he call it? Smack jock, something or other, like a jabber jock. He said we're jabber jocks, and I thought that was funny as hell. But you know, without the people that back us, without Liberty News Radio, without New Cloud Media, Jay and his people, without people like Don and people like Paul Fromm, you know, I'm just a little old guy. I'm not trying to be falsely modest or nothing. I'm telling you flat out. I had no training or nothing like this. I'm just an old combat medic, an old RN, trauma certified. That's the only little, if you want to call that glory. There's not a lot of money in it. But we all do this together. And even our webmaster, before we go back to Don, even our webmaster, he was pretty expensive. He's a really good guy. I was really surprised when I found out who he was, that he fooled somebody like Blood River Radio. But he, after, it didn't take too long, he started doing it pro bono. It's his contribution. He likes to be, you know, what's that word I'm looking for? Invested in Blood River. So it takes, when you hear us broadcasting on this, when you hear me being a jabber jock, there's many, many, many people behind this. It's not just me, I guarantee you. And our donors, we couldn't do this, but I'd like to hammer that home, because especially since the end of the year is coming up, I do not want to forget that at all. And before I go back. And Don is doing a marvelous job at doing exactly like I hoped he would do. I'd like to ask him a quick question and then let him roll on. You mentioned that Edward Weakum, I think, was the governor of Georgia, and he was the
Arizona.
I got it written down here, Arizona. And that was the only state in the Union that didn't recognize Martin Luther King Day, something like that.
Yeah, it wasn't a state holiday or anything. You know, they didn't go along with that. Every other state made it a state holiday. Of course, it was a federal holiday, too, and he would not make it a state holiday in Arizona.
Well, with Bo Greitz, the way he felt toward David Duke, and by him having that Vietnamese child, how would he have gotten along with it seems I saw that connection there. I would think that the Arizona governor would probably they might have a little. I know that's kind of. That probably doesn't have anything to do with your story, but did they get along that you know of, or did they?
I don't know. Yeah, they knew each other. They were both Mormons, sort of, you know, on the fringes of Mormonism. You know, very conservative Mormon types, but I don't think they were. They weren't strong on the racial issues. They were strong on traditional values and you know, the overreach of the federal government and overtaxation and things like that. But I think on race, I would call Grace, in fact, an anti-racist almost. Meekum was more, he just didn't, it just wasn't a big deal to him one way or the other. I would just say a couple of things, Eddie.
Sure.
I had a show on Sam Bushman's network about 8 years ago, the Liberty News Radio, and like I said, he's a good man. And always remembered him, and he treated me well. And you know, I'm glad you guys are on his network. That's a good thing. And the other thing too is, you know, with the people out there to donate occasionally or whatever, it does make a huge difference. You know, I struggled for years and years keeping the Populist Party going and its successor organization, the American Freedom Union. And you know, there was always people that would come through and make a donation, but you know, it was just, you know, we're so underfinanced. It's a tragedy. Just so underfinanced. So anyone out there listening, you know, help Eddie out, help Blood River Radio out, help Liberty News Radio out. It does make a difference.
Thank you. You know,
well, you're very deserving.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, I used to talk about, this may be kind of an aside, but I like to have people to know who we are. We had a co-host, a mutual friend, the young Jacob Tyler. He's living in South America now, but he was such an intellectual. It was hard, in some ways, it's hard to control him. I say, look, these people are drinking out of a fire hose. We need to cut it down to a water fountain. He knew so much and was so good, but I would say, look, we only got in the beginning 2 hours, you know, you know. But he was, I kind of forgot where I was going there with Jacob, but you know, he was trying to get work within our so-called movement.
Right.
And I said, yep. I said, look, Jacob, you're going to have to go outside. I don't know anybody in this movement, anybody that does what I'm doing, what Sam does. I don't know anybody that we don't have any money. Our movement, the League of the South, no, it's always the same thing. Enemy, the people we're fighting, they don't just have it. They print the money. In fact, I'm just reading a book by G. Gordon, not G. Gordon Liddy, G. Edward Griffin, I believe it is, on called The Creature from Jekyll Island. And you know what? And I'm going to say this before we go back to the, I'm notorious for going these rabbit trails. The greatest, if there's a greater fraud in the world that's ever been put down, we the people, than our financial, our money system, than the current one we have, perpetrated by the World Banks, the International Bank of Settlements is the granddaddy of them all. And which, if your people knew, if they really knew exactly how the financial system works, our currency, who's sponsoring it, who's behind it. Fraud, you can't imagine the fraud. And basically, we're all debtors, slaves, we're all serfs. It's a system of serfs, serfdoms and masters. But anyway, I shut up about that, but you're absolutely right. Money is very, 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 very hard to come by. Matter of fact, Sam, I'll say one more thing. Sam told me that I need to have drives for money, but I always forget. Matter of fact, in the third hour, I'll mention these books I've got that have been given to me to sell, and I keep forgetting to do that. But anyway, I got to shut the hell up. Hope I didn't throw you off too much track off of Bo Grice. We used to talk to him. He used to be one of my favorite guests. He was a really good guy. Tough
man. Very impressive, very impressive man. There's no question about it. He was our candidate in 1992, a presidential candidate. You know, he decided not to run with David Duke, but in 92 we did run him. And, you know, he's very charismatic, very, very powerful individual, and, you know, very likable, too. I would say, so, yeah, Jacob's, I know Jacob, he's done some work for me, and, you know, he's another one. He's like, you know, we're just these tiny little outposts here and there, and, nobody seems to have the money to actually hire people and put them to work doing what they're good at, unfortunately. And, yeah, that's what Willis Carter was the only one all these years I was involved. He had a huge operation. He employed dozens of people, but he used it to keep everybody else down. He didn't want any rivals, financially or otherwise. And I think that's why he decided to go after me and the Populist Party the way he did.
I got another question since you said that, Don. The picture you're painting, it's not all the way complete, but the portrait that you've been waving and painting ever since the last program, you know what, if Willis Carto was not, if he wasn't an agent of our enemy, I mean, he's sure there's two strikes against him, because, I mean, if he had half a brain, evidently he's a very intelligent man, he had to know he was destroying one of the very few defense organizations that was gaining ground, getting some traction to get going. But is he trying to destroy it? Don, am I reading too much?
Twice, Eddie. Twice. I mean, the first one, the 1984 party, it was headquartered right in Liberty Lobby. And, you know, Bob Richards was an American hero. He ended up suing Bob Richards. That he totally ignored him after a while in the spotlight. Like I said, that thing just turned into a complete fiasco. And then We started up again in 1984 or 1987, the Populist Party of America, and the Liberty Lobby had no direct control over it financially or otherwise. And so, and this was 2 years after Willis Cardo left it. I had pretty much the executive committee thought we had some conflicts with him. It was all done democratically. We had votes on things, and he kept losing out. So he left voluntarily, and then 2 years later, he went after us and tried to destroy it again. And he did do a good number on us. I'm sure he thought we were going to completely collapse, and we just barely hung on for a long time. But even again, these attacks on me started in 1991, 2 years after Cardo had voluntarily left the party, and we still ran Bogreitz. We still ran a presidential campaign in 1992. Even though we're being attacked every week by the spotlight, which was much bigger than us, had a huge, circulation I was talking about. It wasn't 350,000 at that point. It was still about 200,000, and we only had a few thousand supporters. So, I mean, and most of those people were reading the spotlight. So how do you compete against that? It was very, very difficult.
I wish I had 20,000. I wish I had a newspaper with 2,500. People, I can't believe this gets to the last break of the second hour, but have no fear. Don is going to be on with his heart. I'm so grateful he is. Be right back, folks.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
The smell of napalm in the morning. Smells like victory.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Ooh, they're red, white, and blue.
Dear Blood River Radio family, like I was telling Don during the break, I'm serious. We could go on because this is my forte, what we're talking about right now. We could go on for 6 hours. I'm telling you what, I'm going to say this. I don't know if I said this during the break or on the commercial because I'm And my mind just goes to, I need like 4 mouths or less, I don't know, less enthusiasm or something. But, I was talking, see, there I got myself kind of off track, but I was talking to Don. And one of the many reasons I'm so interested in this party, I'm an idealist, and I never, ever give up. I never say uncle. I mean, hell, fire people. I'm not tooting my own horn. I'm 78 damn years old almost, and I'm running friggin' marathons. And I was 65 when I started. So that says I never, never say never, never give up. I don't give a damn. I'm notorious for running until I pass out. Because I passed out during two runs. In fact, there's a younger friend said, Eddie Miller. Oh, that's Papo. He's famous for running a marathon, passing out, and then getting up and puking and vomiting, and then finishing the marathon. But you gotta have that can't quit up, never quit spirit. And the reason I'm saying that, believe it or not, leading to a point, we have listeners out there that are young, especially younger listeners. I want you to pay attention. Even if you have to go back in the archives and listen to the past couple of shows that Don has done, he's giving you nuts and bolts of what it's like to start a third party. And I hope you young guys, you can contact me, Eddie at BloodRiverRadio.com. We get in touch with Don, but we need, we need another party, by God, other than the two parties we got right now. And Don, and another question I was going to ask him, we got plenty of time, before, even if we have to do another show, he's talked about how hard it is to start a third party. And I would say, it's probably a rhetorical question, but do you think because it's the duopoly party, it doesn't want to start it? But I hope I didn't throw you off too much there, Don, but there's just, you've covered such stuff that's got my interest just going wild, man, and my enthusiasm going wild about this. I wish we could start another party like that, Don. But go ahead, Don. I hope I didn't throw you off. I got some questions after you get through.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to get into all that too, Eddie. So let me just try and wrap this up real quick then, because, in a nutshell, the Populist Party was doing great for a number of years. Willis Carto decided to destroy because he couldn't control it. He went after it viciously, centering around me. I was the demon, you know, the bad, the one that he had promoted to be the national leader of the party. All of a sudden, you know, I was the enemy. I hadn't changed. I was doing what I'd always done, and we stood up to him ethically, and you know, we had better ideas than him or whatever, and he left the party, then started attacking me. So the attacks went on and on, and eventually I found a law firm to represent us in a libel suit against Carto, Piper, Vince Ryan, who was the editor, Liberty Lobby, and they countersued. But this is where it even gets crazier, Eddie. I mean, the attorney I hired committed malpractice. He was with a pretty good firm in suburban D.C. in Maryland. He was in the process of starting his own law firm, I guess, and he saw that there was a lot of work involved in this. You know, it was not easy. This was a complicated libel case, a lot of different libels going back years. And so he just basically, that's not the right legal term, but he blew us off. And our case ended up being thrown out of court by a federal magistrate. So I turned around and filed a legal malpractice suit against him, his law firm, and his former law firm. Okay? So I'm not only going up against Piper and Carto and Liberty Lobby, I'm now going up against my former attorney and two law firms. And then they hired through their insurance company, they hired a high-powered firm in Pittsburgh to represent them. So I'm fighting all these people. And then of course, Mark Lane is representing Liberty Lobby. I'm fighting all these people, dead broke, out of my small townhouse I was living in at the time. Every time I went out to the mailbox, there's all these legal pleadings. They're just trying to bury me with work. But I hung in there. And then in the meantime, we're still running candidates. We're carrying on as best we could. We still had national meetings. We ran candidates, still ballot candidates in different states. And we did everything possible. I'm still putting out a monthly newspaper and doing everything possible to keep the party alive while we're trying to withstand this legal onslaught and hopefully prevail. And so they did everything they could to delay it. It was dismissed at one point by a federal judge in Pittsburgh, a black federal judge, a left-wing activist judge. And I appealed then. I went to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, this is years. This is in 1996. This, we won the appeal. And anyone who wants to read it can go to, it's one thing I didn't mark. It's called Wassall. Wassall v. DeCaro, DeCaro, Wassall v. DeCaro. It's the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, 1996. So anyone wants to read it, and that'll give you a good idea of what we went through. So anyway, we won the appeal. This was years. This was 5 years after we initially filed suit, and then next year it finally went to trial in Pittsburgh, in federal court in Pittsburgh. We had a 3-week trial, and the judge or the jury ruled unanimously in our favor. So we won the suit. And here's what's crazy, too. We had to win.
You were exhausted.
We had to prove that not only that there was legal malpractice against us, but if there had not been legal malpractice, we would have prevailed in the original libel suit against Gardo and Liberty Lobby. So we had to win two different cases, and we did. And we had no money. Kirk Lyons may be familiar to some of your listeners. He came from North Carolina.
Yes.
Stayed at my place for a month, and he, you know, he helped tremendously in court and, you know, with other things too. And so we prevailed. Initially there was a $2.1 million judgment in our favor. That was later cut substantially. It was settled for a lot less. And you know, then there was attorney fees, and it ended up where, you know, I got some damages, the party got some damages, but in the meantime, over 7 years had gone by. A lot of people were dead or exhausted. Yeah, I mean, we had just been through too much to keep the party going at that point. So that was basically the end of it after a 7-year legal fight. I mean, vicious legal fight. And the whole time, every time you open the spotlight, there's a picture of me, a doctored picture of me with some other, you know, fake letters to the editor, you know, wassail this, wassail that. I mean, it was like a cartoon. You know, it was just unbelievable. I mean, I went into this with the best of intentions and always had the best of intentions, you know, and it just turned into a nightmare, you know? But at any rate, I kept it going. I kept the remnants of it going. I started something that wasn't a political party, but it's called the American Nationalist Union. I had hoped if it grew, it could become a political party. So I sort of operated like one, and I kept the Populist Observer going, which I called the Nationalist Times. It was a monthly newspaper, and it lasted until last year, until June of 2023, when I finally gave up the ghost, because it was just, you know, like you're talking about donations. I mean, I kept it alive and kept it alive and kept it going, but it couldn't grow. There was just no way for it to grow. And, you know, and of course, print publications are become a little more obsolete each year. People die off and they're not replaced by younger people. And I didn't have an advertising budget to reach people. And so, you know, it was just, I did the best I could for 40 years, put it that way.
And you had that newspaper for 30 years, you know, so you're $1.5 million.
Yeah, that lasted 38 years.
Damn. But your $1.5 million, your share by the time of paying off all the expensive stuff, were you able to get a popsicle out of that, Don? I mean,
not much more than that. There's two different attorneys that got a lot more out of it than I did, and then there was various people in the party got, you know, they got some minimal damages and stuff too. I didn't get much. I mean, I got some. It was, you know, a couple $100,000, but you know, for 7 years of nonstop work and I, you know, being beyond bankrupt, and you know, I mean, I was put through. Honestly, I was put through the wringer, you know, but. I never gave up, never gave in. I still never given up.
That's incredible.
And I outlasted all them too. Cardo, Piper, Mark Lane, all done in 2015.
And now Mark Lane, if I remember right, you told me on the program he was the buddy of Willis Cardo, and he was like a ultra leftist, and when he won, like participated in the Freedom Rider. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, he was a Freedom Rider. He ran on a Communist Front presidential ticket. I think it was 1960. He was Jim Jones's spokesman in Guyana. He was there when it all went down. He ran into the woods, and he was one of the few that survived.
You know what? That's like fiction movies material. But you know that right there alone. I mean, who could not smell of the whole
a rat?
A whole bunch of rats. I mean,
I'll tell you what, Eddie, now that so much has come out with the deep state and Americans, more Americans finally realizing that we're lied to constantly, I'm sure a lot was going on back and then with the Populist Party and everything. There was a deep state involvement. There was ways they were watching us to using Cardo or whoever to, you know, sabotage it once they thought it became a threat to them. And you know, that's exactly what happened.
You know, Cardo had plenty of money, and we just got through saying how tough, it's beyond tough to keep a radio program going, a newspaper going. It's always struggle for money, and yet we have this guy who's supposed to be one of us, and he's rolling money. I'm wondering, where is he getting that money? That's about three red flags, I guarantee.
Well, can I throw something else out there, too?
Sure, far away.
The Liberty Lobby, we figured out, was taking in about $5 million a year. And it was supposedly a congressional lobby. I mean, it was headquartered at this multi-million dollar building right a couple blocks from the Capitol building in D.C. It was a congressional lobby, and yet we did some digging. It was inactive. It was listed as inactive congressional lobby since 1979. So he's bringing in $5 million a year, attacking people like the Populist Party groups, me and stuff, and doing nothing as a congressional lobby. So what was he doing with his $5 million a year?
If he was still around, still alive, he'd be attacking Blood Rip Radio, I guarantee WMT. Well, people, don't go anywhere. Thank God Don's going to be here for the third hour. We're going to pick up our brother Paul from, who is... he's very impressive, too. I think he's going to be a great match for Don, and I know you'll love it. So don't go anywhere. Be right back, folks. Get this is a long break. Be right back.